As farmers are being squeezed by rising fuel and fertilizer prices, there's a new agreement between the Department of Justice and one of the world's biggest agriculture companies aimed at bringing down seed prices. At the end of May, the Justice Department announced that it had reached a deal with the company Bayer to suspend parts of its seed purchasing loyalty program for 7 years. The Trump administration said incentives from the program prevented resellers from seeking out cheaper seed alternatives. Genetically modified seeds rose 700% in price from 2000 to 2015. By 2020, just two companies, Bayer and Corteva, sold more than half of all corn and soybean seeds nationwide, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Julie Dawson is a professor and extension specialist in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at UW-Madison. Julie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this agreement, Bayer, which makes people are familiar with their pharmaceuticals. They also make a lot of agricultural products. How does this loyalty program work? What does this mean that it's being ended for now?
Well, there aren't a lot of details in the information that has been released. What we've heard from seed companies that have these arrangements with Bayer is that up until recently, the loyalty programs had requirements for multiple products at once. So a company would need to make sales targets across corn and soy and potentially other products in order to get a rebate at the end of the year. Often that rebate was most of their profit margin for the year, so it was essential that they were able to get it.
How big an impact does this kind of program have on the agricultural community?
I think it has a large impact, partly because dealers are becoming more and more specialized in only one of the large companies' products. So farmers have said that their local seed dealers are more one brand than they used to be, which means that they might have to go to more than one dealer if they want to get products from, say, Bayer and Corteva, or they also often have a discount or a loyalty program to purchase all of their products from one company, even if there might be alternatives that would perform better for them.
Now, these loyalty programs are one piece of a wider story that I think you've been following for some time now, the consolidation of the seed market. What do we see when we look at who's providing the bulk of seeds to Wisconsin farmers, to American farmers?
So Bayer and Corteva are the biggest, and then Syngenta, which is now owned by ChemChina, is the next, and then BASF. So for Wisconsin, we don't grow cotton, so it's mostly corn and soybeans, so that would be Bayer and Corteva. There are a few smaller to mid-sized companies. They operate more regionally, and then there are a number of independent seed companies, probably about 150, but they mostly license varieties from the big companies and sell them to farmers. And those independents are the ones that are signing the licensing agreements with Bayer that we just talked about.
Why is the seed market so consolidated?
It started in the 90s with the advent of genetically engineered traits because those could be utility patented. And there were a number of factors that went into the consolidation, but the ability of companies to use utility patents as a form of intellectual property protection allowed them to essentially close off research and development with anything containing those traits. And those traits were extremely popular with farmers because they reduced the management costs and the complexity of management. That was the original Roundup Ready and some of the BT traits. So in order to be competitive in the market, all of the independent companies had to license those traits from the trait provider. And then that led to a series of smaller acquisitions and mergers that eventually became a much more consolidated industry.
And that's, people might be surprised thinking of seeds as intellectual property. You might think of, different kinds of scientific ideas and developments, or a movie is treated as intellectual property. Talk a little more about why seeds end up being treated as intellectual property.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are surprised that you can take out a utility patent on a seed variety. Mm-hmm. The utility patent started with just the genetically engineered traits, and that was after the Supreme Court decision in 1980 that allowed for the patenting of a transgenic bacteria. So that was the first utility patent use, was on the trait that was genetically engineered, not the variety itself. There are other forms of intellectual property protection that did apply to seeds before that, but they were quite different from utility patents because they allowed people to save seed, farmers to save seed, and others to use the variety in research and breeding to develop a new variety. So the first intellectual property rights were plant patents, which are different than utility patents. Those started in 1930, and they were for things that you propagate clonally, like grafting trees, for example. And then in 1970, a second type of intellectual property rights for seed was passed by Congress, the Plant Variety Protection Act. And that is, it functions a little more like copyright than like a utility patent, because it protects the investment that goes into creating a new variety, but it allows other people to build on that variety. It just doesn't allow them to sell that particular variety without paying a license to the variety developer. So similar to a creative work where an author has copyright on a book or a movie, but other people can use that, read it, and create something new from the same words that are in that book, for example.
What kind of changes would you like to see when it comes to federal regulation or legal changes to address consolidation in the seed market?
I think there are a number of things. If there was a research exemption for utility patents on seeds, or if the Plant Variety Protection Act was the form of intellectual property allowed on seeds, that would open up a lot of space for new entrants or for other companies to develop varieties that farmers might use. And then the second thing would be to really look at the contracting practices, such as the licensing agreement that we talked about with Bayer, because those contracts often prohibit independent dealers from carrying multiple companies' products. And that really narrows the scope of what farmers have access to, because the independent companies can't do their own testing to determine what would work best for farmers in their area, and they can't carry products from multiple suppliers.
Julie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Julie Dawson is a professor and extension specialist in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at UW-Madison. To learn more about how this deal could impact some of Wisconsin's independent seed producers, Dylan Bruce is with us, organic farmer and co-founder of Driftless Seed Supply near Ferryville. Dylan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Dylan, do you see this deal affecting independent seed sellers like yourself in Wisconsin and beyond?
I do, yes. I mean, I think it's a really nice signal that the USDA and DOJ and presumably the FTC are going to continue doing some of the competition and antitrust work that was initiated under the Biden administration when they had an executive order promoting competition in the American economy. And they really pushed that in USDA. And so I'm really happy to see this as a signal that all of that work behind the scenes that they don't like to talk about until deals become public is continuing. And of course, with these bigger companies, they're often working through, licensed resellers, small local businesses that can do a better job serving the farmers. And those businesses exist all over Wisconsin. And so it's really, it's a great signal to help support those businesses that in turn are supporting our local farmers.
This loyalty program is just one, I think, kind of small part of the wider story of the seed industry consolidation. From your vantage as an independent seed seller, what does that look like to you?
You know, I am not a commodity seed breeder or seller. I operate in the specialty crop space. But one of the concerns that I often have is that these big seed companies It can feel like they lose sight a little bit of the specialty crop industries with their focus on commodity crops. Of course, they're playing in this space of where they really have to balance efficiency and economy of scale to deliver the maximum value to their shareholder. But what that means, boots on the ground, is that local adaptation, regional brands, regional breeding programs can sometimes get lost in that noise because they just don't fit that narrative of maximum efficiency and economy of scale. And so, you know, I think it's a good example that when Bayer acquired Monsanto in 2018, they were forced to divest their more historic vegetable seed business, Nunhems, which was originally a Dutch company that had been acquired, because they were a principal competitor with Monsanto. And so they sold that to BASF. And Monsanto, having been a US-based company, we also see this pattern of genetics, IP, and seed moving out of the United States and being owned by these international companies, which I think ultimately is also partly a concern for our food security and our farm security.
It's interesting. It seems like that might leave more room for smaller specialty seed companies in Wisconsin if those big national ones are so focused on the commodity crops, the soys and corn here in Wisconsin. Is there something to that?
I think there is something to that. And it's interesting because we've actually seen a little bit of a U-shaped trend in the seed industry in the last, 20 or so years, in the sense that while we see a reduction of sort of the medium scale players and the big scale players and consolidation in that space, there actually has been an increase of very small companies analogous to my own, mostly in the Northeast and the Pacific Northwest, although a little bit in other regions of the country, in the Midwest included. And so it does create some opportunity, but there are still concerns, I think, where we're consolidating the genetic resources that we really don't know what we might need and when to meet the challenges of agriculture in the future. And so, when BASF bought Nunhems, it advertised in that press release or whatever it was that there was more than 2,500 varieties across 24 crops, while now it's publicly advertising in terms of vegetable scope under the Nunhems brand, some 1,200 odd varieties across, I think, 20 crops or something like that. And that reduction, that's not a loss to that company. They've still got those seeds in their vaults. They still have that potential there. But it does mean that those genetic resources, those varieties, those disease resistances, those adaptations that are held within those varieties become pretty much effectively unavailable to independent breeders like myself. And it also puts, pressure on our public plant breeders as well, because, as they're rolling over these patents and really focusing on their currently actively patented varieties that are the ones out in the public space, those aren't accessible for research. Those aren't accessible for independent plant breeders. And so it really hampers kind of innovation potential for independent breeders like myself.
Dylan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure.
Dylan Bruce is an organic farmer and co-founder of Driftless Seed Supply in Ferryville in western Wisconsin and in Viroqua. Earlier, we spoke with Julie Dawson, professor and extension specialist in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at UW-Madison.